Welcome to Teen Scientist. My name is Raina Malhotra, your host this evening, and doing our audio engineering is James Johnson. Teen Scientist aims to bring stories of groundbreaking innovation in the science, technology, engineering, and math disciplines entirely from a teenage perspective. The program highlights local, regional, and national STEM stories with young people or respected experts in their field. Joining us today, we have Asha Saxena, tech entrepreneur, founder, and CEO of Women Leaders in Data and AI, and a professor at Columbia University. Welcome, Asha. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me, Raina.
It's amazing to have you with us on Teen Scientist. To start us off, could you share with us a little bit about your education and background?
Absolutely. So my undergrad is in computer science engineering, and my master's is in also computer science, but I specialize in data science and machine learning. And my background, I started my career as a programmer, but I landed up building a large data science, data management consulting firm with over 350 employees. And then I went on building an e-commerce company. And my most recent business was healthcare analytics software company. I'm now teaching at Columbia University. I teach master's students, graduate level students, for their MHA entrepreneurship and consulting practice.
And what exactly inspired you to follow a career in data science and machine learning?
You know, I was always fond of really learning about how any business runs. So when you are working in a company, the most important asset is how the workflow works. So if you're selling coffee, where does the coffee beans come from? How does the coffee is made and how the coffee is sold? At every step, there's a data that's getting collected. And the data science field is all about understanding what the data is telling you, what kind of story the data is telling you. So data science is a really interesting field, and it's the field where you are like a little spy. You go in and hunt for patterns, and you hunt for information and knowledge, and you try to understand what my data is telling me. So data science is really an interesting field, and I was very interested in data in general from early on in my career. As a programmer, you get to code, but as a data scientist, you're trying to find patterns. And early on in my career, I was working in financial industry, Merrill Lynch, and financial services industries usually use a lot of data. And my love for data started just being working in the data management field to really start hunting for answers. And machine learning is a fascinated field where you're trying to train machines, your computers, to learn from the history, to learn from the data. So if you feed the data information, if you feed the computer information, the computer, the algorithm, get trained by itself to improve the performance. So I think data science and machine learning is truly the next wave of our world. And I think there's so many opportunities, not only for people who are in the business, but also for the next generation. So I'm personally very, even now, even though I've spent about 28 years in this field, I still feel like I'm a child in this field and trying to learn and explore constantly every single day.
And now we're going to transition to your work with data and AI. You're the founder and CEO of Women Leaders in Data and AI, or WLDC. What was your mission for this company, and what exactly does this group of women do?
Such a good question. This is an important question because I really, if you see my background, I was an engineer, I was a programmer, and then I was an entrepreneur managing large data systems and spending so much time in building a consulting firm, a software company. What I realized that as an engineer, I spent a lot of time building businesses, but there was a need for women specifically in data and AI field to really come together to start creating an impact. And I launched this organization to really bring senior women leaders from Fortune 1000 companies to come together and become stronger leaders. So it's a peer-to-peer experience sharing, learning opportunity to build an environment where we can bring in the next generation of leaders to the corporate culture and corporate structure and make sure that there's enough women in technology. Usually in technology field, Raina, there's not as many women, and especially in the leadership role in large corporations. So when you look at Fortune 500 or Fortune 1000 companies, there's not enough women. And my intent was that building this organization, I am bringing together women who are C-level or VP level who are coming together to help support each other and also build structure where we can bring in additional women up the ladder.
So as an entrepreneur, how would you say today's top businesses are using data as the fuel to drive their explosive growth?
Listen, every single company today who's growing really, really fast is using data as a fuel for growth. I talk about, if you think about Uber, it's the largest transportation company but owns no cars. BMW, which owns cars, or Avis Rent-A-Car, which used to be a large company, when you have a company like Uber and Lyft coming in, they're really taking advantage of the data to understand where my customers are, what their needs are. And the whole Uber Eats came from really understanding what their customer really needed. So the businesses today who are taking advantage of understanding their data are launching a lot more services for their customers. Think about Amazon. Amazon started as a selling books, and now they do everything. They sell all different kinds of products. And the way they do it is by really understanding and recommending what you might like. So they really are trying to understand what their customers need, and they're trying to sell different products to their customers. Netflix is a great example of using data very effectively. They not only broke the brick-and-mortar model, Blockbuster, which was, at that time, a mega video distribution company, video rental company. Netflix came in, went online, then broke its own business model by streaming all the videos, really understood the customers, and launched the content business. So Netflix original came out of when Netflix really understood how their customers behaved. So when we talk about the algorithms and machine learning, Netflix really used building algorithms and machine learning to understand their customer profiles and understand what the customers want so they could produce media like House of Cards. You know, they say that when House of Cards was launched, they knew that it would be successful. And the reason they knew that House of Cards would do so well was because they had already studied their customers' behavior and they knew what the customers wanted to see. And because of that, they could launch a successful series after series, and they've become the leader in producing the Netflix original content. We would have never really thought about, right? Think about it. We would have never thought about, we were used to going to the store and renting the videos, and then we were used to renting it on DVD, and now we are used to streaming, and now we know that Netflix can also create content. So it's just fabulous. So I just think that companies like Netflix, Uber, Airbnb really have transitioned and shown traditional large businesses that data can truly help you create explosive growth.
How is big data used in social media companies, and how does it affect our human behavior?
So big data, really, if you try to understand what big data is really all about volume, which is how much data you are collecting. Is the variety of data. So we say structured and unstructured, which means structured data, we traditionally had databases which were rows and columns. And now you're working with unstructured data, which is images, videos, pictures, notes on the paper. So you're taking all different kinds of data. So it's the different variety of data. And then it's the velocity, how fast we are collecting the data. So big data is all about variety, velocity, They also say veracity, how clean the data is, and the volume. So it's really about working with the data, which is coming to you really fast. It's big volume. It's variety of data. So in social media, you get all of that, right? So you're getting a lot of data. You're getting data of different kinds of data. And big data in social media specifically is becoming more and more enabler for you to understand what the market wants. Now, because we have the kind of data we have available in social media, we can do very sophisticated analytics. We can understand the sentiment, what people are talking about or what people care about. There's a really great example. Microsoft launched an AI bot, artificial intelligence bot. And when they launched it, it was a girl, so it was a teenager who had an account on Twitter. And within 16 hours, she was listening to the social commentary and became biased. So she basically became very angry, and Microsoft had to take it off, because machine learning really multiplies what it hears. And social media data is so, and that's why I say ethics in AI is so critical. How we act, how we react, what kind of biases we have in our system, we need to be very careful. And again, the WILDA, the Women Leaders in Data and AI, WILDA.tech, which I launched, really focuses on creating or watching the biases and trying to create the parity in the world so that there is enough women, there's enough diversity of thought, there's enough diversity of data, and the ethics of AI is followed to make sure that what we are building and what we are creating is creating for good.
Well, right now we're going to pause for a quick break, but when we return, we'll continue discussing data networking and AI with Asha Saxena. This is Raina Malhotra, and you're listening to Teen Scientist on WDIY.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture, from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Galicia, and Brittany, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Bringing you music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 on WDIY Allentown, listener-supported community public radio.
Welcome back to Teen Scientist on WDIY. This is Raina Malhotra, and tonight we're talking about AI and data in our society with data strategist Asha Saxena. Let's jump right back in where we left off. Why is deep learning, artificial intelligence, and blockchain technologies creating new potential for the future?
You know, there is no other choice. I mean, I cannot even tell you that it's not that we have a choice that AI, blockchain, or machine learning, or deep learning creates potential in the future. It is here. I would say 90% of what we do day to day is using some kind of AI, from when you're talking to Alexa, or you're ordering pizza, or you're watching movies, or you're reading news. Anything you do during the day, you're touching AI in some aspect. So when I say AI, I'm kind of combining deep learning, machine learning, all different kinds of technology, advanced technologies, and blockchain, which of course, you know, has become a really hot topic of blockchain. The whole concept was to create these transactions which were secured and recorded. And these technologies are going to continue coming into our world a lot more. We it's here. I don't think there is an option for us, organizations, companies, higher education has to address these technologies, because we are in the era of Industry 4.0, where we have the major technologies who are going to take over. You know, we talk about singularity, and it's not too far. Singularity is going to be here before you know it, where machines are taking over in every part of our life.
And how is blockchain benefiting consumers, businesses, and governments by securing data?
So when you think about data, security is such an important topic. From a credit card, you know, you hear about credit card fraud, which is so common now. I mean, I remember 10 years back, we would be worried about that. There are so many breaches and so many hacking and so much sale of data, you know, is happening. There's, you know, take the data, steal the data, and then sell the data. Or the kind of harm that can be done if the data is not secured is tremendous. And there's a lot of compliances that has been created. What blockchain provides is for consumers and for businesses, for the government to create this record and security around the transactions. This can be good or bad, like anything else in the world, right? So technology can be used for good or can be used for bad. So again, as I say always, that the ethics of technology is really critical. And for me, I would say, even though I spent 28 years in the business world, I feel that our journey, our mission is to make sure that the world of AI is built for good and built by creating an impact on the society in the positive way.
And where do you see data management, data analytics, and the big data world progressing in the future?
Listen, we started with, in 1960s, 1970s, we started with, you know, really mainframe, and then we moved on to client-server technologies, and then came to the web technology. So the data management and data analytics world was there, you know, for a while. It has been there for a while. In some shape or forms, we've been always doing the data management, data analytics. But the big data, the power of computing has helped us capture the big data and process the big data. And the whole deep learning really is when you can use this power of computing to process data and start creating the impact. And it would be surprising, it would not be surprising to see how quickly we are implementing deep learning and AI into the world because of the kind of power we have into our computing today. So I truly believe that a lot more jobs and a lot more opportunities will be coming in the big data AI world, AI fields, than ever before. I mean, my generation, your parents' generation, or your grandparents' generation would have not thought about the kind of opportunities I think this generation is going to see, your generation, Reina, is going to see. And I think it's exciting because it's fun and it's creative and it's interesting. So I think there'll be a lot more, my hope is that there'll be a lot more younger girls and boys getting into this field, because the kind of jobs and the kind of technologies which is available for you to explore is a lot more now, and a lot of interesting projects. You can really create an impact in the world. So you'll have a purpose-driven work life if you're in the field of data and AI.
And because so many of our listeners are teenagers, how would you say younger generations could become a part of this big data world?
Listen, you start small. If you're in high school, if you're in college, just starting small, starting learning about programming, learning about databases, learning about analytics is really just the early signs. I know a lot of really young kids are learning Python and R. So that's a great way to just get started and see how you can visualize a simple data set. You can start with just learning about your favorite TV programs or your favorite sports teams, and you analyze what's working, what's not working, what is my favorite team, how my favorite player is doing. Or, you know, so you can really start with some fun projects on data, and then you really take it to your school and then take some courses and learn about statistics and learn about analytics. So you really start learning about the field and see if you like it. Again, If you're a programmer, it doesn't mean that if you're a programmer, you can be in data and big data world or AI world. You can do a lot of different things, how you visualize the data. So there's a lot of different ways you can enter into the world of data and AI.
And what would you like to share with our teen listeners who think data and AI is a future for them?
I think that I'll be very proud to all the teenagers who are listening to this show, because I really think that if you try to explore the world of data and AI, it's so big and so huge, and there's so much promising opportunities for you in the future, that I would encourage you to actually try to figure out if you can maybe start creating your own projects. See what you're interested in and see how you can analyze. It's really like being a spy. Can you actually figure out a solution to a problem? And there is a lot of different open data sources. So if you go online, you can go to GitHub and download some data sources. You can go on opendata.gov, where you can download. You can download the data of the weather. You can download the data of traffic. Or if you're living in an urban city, what highways or where do I go from, or what public transportation should I take? You can download a lot of city data and start analyzing the data. So if you are a teenager, if you're interested in the field, figure out what problem you want to solve. You can get the data and try to analyze the trends and analyze where the solution is. So I think it's very easy to get into this field, even if you don't have a formal education, even if you don't have a class in your school. It's a great way to enter, is trying to understand what problem can I solve and where can I get the data. And there are so many platforms available online. You can go into any of these platforms. As I gave you two examples, you can go on GitHub and download data. You can go to opendata.gov. I'm sure in your schools and summer camps, there'll be a lot of opportunities where you can actually get in and touch and feel and trying to get to learn about these technologies, because there is so much you can do with it. And you can truly create an impactful work professional life. So I would encourage highly to all the teenagers to look into it seriously.
And finally, how could our listeners learn more about you and your organization?
Sure. You can go on LinkedIn and find me, Asha Saxena. If you just search me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, it's Asha Saxena 101. It's 101. Or you can check out the website wlda.tech, WLDA.TECH. So you can connect with me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, Asha Saxena 101, or check out the website wlda.tech.
And is there any advice that you could give to our listeners if you were in their shoes?
I would just say be curious. Never stop learning and explore. Because you will not find out what you're in love with unless you truly explore different fields. And don't be scared. I would say always be curious, don't be scared. Make sure you're exploring and never stop learning. Learning doesn't come from going to school and do a traditional way of learning. You can learn from anything and everything. So figure out what is the best way you can learn. You might learn like learning from listening to an audio, listening to an audiobook or watching a video, or hanging out with your friends and going to a museum. So there are different ways of learning. But I would say, please be curious. Make sure you're exploring the world. There's so much to do and so much to learn. Always be a lifelong learner. Continue to always be learning. And make sure you give it a try. Give your best shot.
Thank you, Asha, for taking the time to be with us today. It's been amazing to hear about how artificial intelligence and data is affecting our world.
It was a pleasure to be on the show. I really enjoyed, Raina, and thank you for doing this. I think this is such an interesting show and an interesting topic. Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure to talk with you, Asha, and we can't wait to see how your work will shape the future. Right now, we are going to pause for a short break. When we return, we'll speak with Dr. Howard Levin about the impacts of technology and social media on the mental health and development of children. I'm Raina Malhotra, and you're listening to Teen Scientist on WDIY.
For program support on WDIY, we thank our underwriting sponsors.
Your health has never been more important. MyLVHN allows you to schedule appointments right from the palm of your hand, message your doctor questions, and even see an LVHN provider from the comfort of your home through video visits. With MyLVHN, you have on-demand access to your health anytime, anywhere. To learn more or to sign up, lvhn.org/myLVHN.
Connect to WDIY with our new streaming app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs that you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices. Welcome back to Teen Scientist on WDIY. I'm your host, Raina Malhotra. Tonight, we'll be exploring recent trends indicating children and adolescents are spending increased amounts of time on social media, particularly during the pandemic, when alternative opportunities for peer socialization are limited. Joining us today is Dr. Howard Levin. He's affiliated with St. Luke's University Health Network and specializes in child and adolescent psychiatry here in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Dr. Levin. How are you today?
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm very good.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and thank you for making the time to join us here on Teen Scientist. To start off, could you share with our listeners a bit about yourself, your education, and your background and passion that led your career path to St. Luke's University Health Network?
So, like you said, I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist. I started becoming interested in mental health and children and adolescents when I was in high school. I worked with some kids on the autistic spectrum at a summer day camp, and that really sparked my interest in the field. And I grew up in the Philadelphia area, and then I did my medical school training at Penn State College of Medicine in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And then I did my residency and fellowship training in psychiatry and child and adolescent psychiatry in New York at Northwell Health in Queens. And then after that, I started working as a child and adolescent psychiatrist, mainly doing outpatient work, seeing children and adolescents with mental health problems about 5 years ago. And I really have enjoyed working and living in the Lehigh Valley.
And then could you describe what your work looks like daily and which groups of children you primarily interact with?
I have an outpatient office, and I work closely with psychotherapists who do a lot of the individual and group therapy with kids and adolescents. The main conditions that I typically see in my office would be things like attention deficit, hyperactivity disorder, anxiety, depression, other kind of mood conditions like bipolar disorder. I also see kids on the autistic spectrum, and pretty rarely, but occasionally, there'll be kids that are dealing with psychotic illnesses. That's pretty uncommon in the younger age range. And most of the focus is trying to find ways of helping patients where they are to sort of improve their life and their functioning, and whether that's through therapy or through medications or a combination of the two, we sort of work to try to find ways to improve their life.
What impact would you say the COVID-19 pandemic and isolation is having on our youth?
Yeah, so the pandemic has definitely had a big impact on education and socialization in youth. From an education standpoint, I think it's really brought out a lot of the disparities in education between people who maybe live in school districts where there are more resources and have access to a lot of technology and were really able to engage in virtual learning versus school districts that maybe didn't have as much resources and couldn't provide as much technological assistance to families or students. Maybe they didn't have the internet access that they needed to really have access to the education, or maybe the teachers just weren't able to provide live learning virtually. And so I think that had a big impact. A lot of students felt like they had to teach themselves a lot of this school year and last school year, and a lot of self-directed learning. And in families where both parents are working and there's a lot of either financial strain or other stressors in the family, really the kid can feel a bit isolated in terms of sometimes having to babysit or watch their siblings, taking on a lot more responsibility than maybe they've had in the past. Parents trying to help their kids with assignments, but feeling like they don't really understand the way the schools are teaching children these days. And there's this dynamic where the parent feels like they're trying to teach the kid a different way than the teachers are trying to teach the kid, and there's some frustration that can build up there. So education has been a significant challenge in the virtual context. In the hybrid context, where kids are going to school part-time and doing virtual learning part-time, it's also been challenging in terms of just having a regular routine, having friends in your classes. And then in the school setting, for schools that have been able to do in person, there's been so much restrictions on the ability to socialize with friends and really have time where you're interacting with other people, that it's really led to a lot of feelings of anxiety, sadness, isolation, and a lot of sort of special events in adolescents' lives sort of that maybe have been missed because they missed graduations or dances or proms. So it's had a huge impact on just special moments in kids' lives and trying to find other ways of making it special for them.
And are all of these impacts negative, or would you say there are benefits as well?
So, I think that there has been some benefits of sort of a virtual platform or of the pandemic. I think the pandemic, while being very scary for a lot of people and also affecting a lot of people negatively in terms of their health, I think has brought a lot of families closer together, especially during the times when everybody was sort of locked down in their homes. There was a lot of opportunities to engage with family that maybe you wouldn't have typically been able to do in everybody's very busy lives. So more time to interact with your kids and for kids to interact with their parents. I think from a virtual standpoint or a technological standpoint, there's been a lot better opportunities to sort of access technology and use technology both in the educational setting and also in the clinical setting. Now we really built up our virtual telemedicine platforms so that we can offer our services to patients and families. Now I have a platform where I can meet with them virtually, even if they're out of state, away from home for school. So I think there have been benefits of sort of getting everybody up and running and a little bit more technologically savvy, as well as sort of bring families close together and having some time to spend with each other that maybe we wouldn't have had in the past.
And how has the pandemic increased social media use and screen time in children?
Yeah, so I think that with parents sort of balancing work responsibilities from home and also trying to help kids virtually with their learning, children and adolescents have been spending a lot more time on devices, computers, iPads, and spending a lot more time on social media, especially since they haven't been able to spend as much time with friends in person due to sort of all the social distancing rules. The only way to really connect with people over the past year has been through virtual platforms, through FaceTime or the social media platforms, or connecting through video games. And so a lot of kids have been telling me they spend a lot of time hanging out with friends on the video game systems or on social media or through meeting with them over some sort of platform where they can meet by video.
And how does this increased use of social media impact the youth's mental and physical development?
Yeah, so from a mental health standpoint, there's been some concern about adolescents becoming overly reliant on their devices, on either the phones or the computer or the tablets. And really, the DSM has been looking at, and the World Health Organization, internet addiction as a potential mental health diagnosis due to just this feeling that some people have where they really can't get away from either social media or from texting or from their phones. And it sort of monopolizes their time, and they're spending so much time on it that they're actually missing out on a lot of other opportunities to socialize in real life in terms of getting involved with extracurricular activities or sports or clubs or taking up hobbies. They sort of spending all their time on the phone or on social media. And sometimes it's sort of out of a sense of seeing what everybody else is doing, which sometimes when everybody's seeing all these positive messages about how great everybody else's life is, it can lead to some feelings of why isn't my life like theirs, and a lot of comparing that can go on, which can lead to either low self-esteem or just feelings of social isolation and depression.
Well, right now we are going to pause for a short break. When we return, we'll continue to speak with Dr. Levin about the impacts of technology and social media on the mental health and development of children. I'm Raina Malhotra, and you're listening to Teen Scientist on WDIY.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Galactic Travels brings you hour-long soundscapes of electronic, ambient, and space music. That's Thursday night at 11, right here on WDIY Allentown, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. Many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to Teen Scientist on WDIY. I'm your host, Raina Malhotra, and with us today is child and adolescent psychiatrist, Dr. Howard Levin. We're going to pick up right where we left off, talking about the impacts of social media on youth mental and physical development. How is youth mental and physical development impacted by the increased use of social media?
Sure. So definitely there has been a lot of studies showing that overuse of social media can lead to sort of negative mental health outcomes in a lot of adolescents. There was a survey done in 2018 that found, among 13 to 17-year-olds, that found that 45% of adolescents are online almost constantly, and 97% of adolescents use a social media platform such as YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, or Snapchat. So that's a great majority of teens. And a study in 2019 of adolescents showed that those who spent more than 3 hours a day using social media might be at a heightened risk for mental health problems. And that if you're spending more than three times a day using social media, it sort of predicted poor mental health and well-being in teens in another study. Also, there's concerns that if you're spending lots of time on social media, especially late at night, that you may not have as good a sleep quality, especially if you're going to bed very late and then having to wake up early for school. And that lack of sleep can lead to definitely higher feelings of anxiety and depression. And then also, like I was mentioning before, just this fear of missing out and feeling like you're missing something, seeing what everybody else is doing constantly on social media that always appears positive, even if you're not always feeling like every day is a happy day yourself.
And what are the correlations between social media use and the rates of youth depression, suicide, and cyberbullying?
Yeah, so like I was saying, definitely there is a link between the amount of time you're spending on social media and increased rates of youth depression. In general, they found that about 20% of youth have some sort of mental health difficulty, whether it's depression or anxiety or another mental health disorder. And unfortunately, out of those, only about 20% actually receive any kind of formal mental health treatment or psychotherapy. So a large proportion of adolescents dealing with depression or other mental health issues really don't get the treatment that they need, which can lead to things like suicidal thoughts or thoughts about self-harm or cutting. And unfortunately, it's also led to a significant increase in the suicide rate in the country among adolescents over the past 10 years. And then there's been concerns about sort of the influence of cyberbullying on adolescents and their mood. And, you know, the more time adolescents are spending on social media, the higher likelihood that they may have experienced cyberbullying at one point or another. In the past, you know, going home at the end of the school day was sort of a reprieve from a lot of the social drama at school and difficulties with friends or other peers at school. It was sort of an opportunity to rest your mind from all of that stress, whether it was good stress or bad stress. And now it's sort of a 24-hour cycle of needing to constantly be aware of what's going on with everybody else and how that can impact your mood and anxiety, and also can lead to kids who may be dealing with their own difficulties feeling a bit marginalized by their peer group and experiencing cyberbullying online, which has led definitely to higher rates of suicidal thoughts in adolescents and depressive symptoms.
And where do you see the connectivity of social media affecting future generations?
I mean, I don't think that there's any way that social media is going to decline in use over time. So I think it's really making sure that the children, adolescents, sort of understand how to incorporate social media in their life in a healthy way, and to not let social media or virtual platforms sort of define who they are as people, and trying to expand their life outside of sort of the internet and social media and find hobbies and live connections with people to really make solid friendships that can last the duration of time, that you can feel sort of truly connected to. And I've had some adolescents say that they really feel connected to people who live across the world that are their virtual friends. And I do think that you can build relationships online, but I think there needs to be a balance of both online relationships and in-person relationships to sort of provide opportunities in both settings to find fulfillment and pleasure in things that you're doing and not sort of having one virtual life and one real life. And to that, you know, I think besides cyberbullying, a lot of adolescents do get involved with things like online dating and texting and sharing sort of this idea of sexting, where you're sort of sharing sexual things in nature with other adolescents. And those kind of things can lead to people getting in trouble if they're not careful about what they're sharing online or in virtual forums. And sometimes when you're impulsive in adolescence, you forget that things that you're posting may last for years to come and may later be things that you regret. And with the online dating, sort of really making sure that the person you're talking to, or even online friends, the person you're talking to is really who they're saying they are, and keeping in mind that people aren't always as they appear when they are hiding behind a device of a computer or a screen. And so really trying to make connections in real life settings can help avoid some of the pitfalls or traps that sometimes people can get into on some of the online or social media platforms.
And you had mentioned earlier that you work with patients that have autism, ADHD, and bipolar disorder. Has there been an increase in these cases recently among teens, and why?
Yeah, so I would say, I mean, the pandemic has led to an increase in pretty much all the mental health conditions. But if you look at things like ADHD, where adolescents or children have trouble focusing in the classroom, have trouble staying organized, have trouble staying on task and prioritizing different things. And then you put them in a virtual environment with less support from teachers, and a lot more distractions in the home environment. You know, there's been a lot more difficulty dealing with the ADHD symptoms than maybe they would have if they were in person with their learning. And with anxiety, especially kids who maybe already were socially anxious, now have been sort of away from the social settings over the past year, trying to get the adolescents back into the social settings where they were having anxiety to start with, and then haven't had anxiety the past year being at home and not having to interact with anybody, and then trying to integrate back into in-person settings, I think has been especially difficult. And so, and also for mood disorders, just this difficulty in terms of in adolescence being a time period where you're getting a lot of pleasure out of spending time with others and interacting socially, the sort of isolation from others has also led to increased rates of depression in adolescence.
And if our listeners want to learn more about this topic and your services, where can they go and how could they reach you?
Yes, to reach me, we do have several child and adolescent psychiatrists and psychotherapists that work with us at St. Luke's Psychiatric Associates, which is part of St. Luke's University Health Network. Our intake phone number is 484-822-5700. We do have a website that you can also search St. Luke's Psychiatry or Therapy, and you'll get information about our services. Also, I would say there are national suicide teen hotlines that can be called, and also every county has crisis intervention services that can be utilized in times of emergency, or if you're feeling really like you can't keep yourself safe, you can always go to the nearest emergency room if you need more immediate mental health treatment. And one good resource always is utilizing your school and your school counselor. And frequently, most schools do have a school therapist that work there that you can always reach out to and are willing to help with a lot of these emotional issues that can come up during adolescence.
Lastly, is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners, parents, or children about the excessive use of social media and technology, especially coming out of this period of isolation?
So, I mean, I would say that balance is always the key. I don't think for parents telling their kids that they should never use social media, I don't think that's necessarily helpful. I think it's just trying to find that balance of how much time is too much time. I think it's important to try to keep that family time there. So not everybody being on their devices at mealtimes or trying to take time out of your day to sort of do things with your family that don't involve electronics is important. But at the same time, learning healthy ways of interacting with the world over social media or virtual platforms, I think, is important as well, especially as our world moves toward more virtual and technological settings. And so learning healthy online behaviors, learning, you know, that what you're posting and sharing is there forever and can be shared even in places that you don't think it's going to. And so just trying to find the rules of the road and finding ways to find balance in your life, not forgetting things that make you happy, and getting back to those things and connecting with people, whether it's online or in person, because I think humans are very social people, and especially adolescence is a time for social development. So really trying to find that connection is so important. And so instead of seeing what everybody else is doing online, calling up a friend and inviting them to do something, I think is a great thing. And even if it takes a little bit of courage to do it, remembering that everybody has those similar worries and fears, and putting yourself out there can lead to great things.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight, Dr. Levin. It's been a pleasure speaking with you about the impacts of social media and technology on developing youth.
Thank you for having me, and thanks for talking about such an important issue.
And thank you so much to our listeners for tuning in today. My name is Raina Malhotra, and I'll see you next time on Teen Scientist.